People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus for Reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open mind and conversation. I'm the one they call Shane. And today for you guys, I have a third time returning guest who usually gets asked to come on shows to talk about one particular topic. But the last time I had her on, at the very end of the conversation, we started diving into philosophical standpoints of a lot of biblical stuff. So I figured that today would be a great opportunity to have her come back on to specifically just dive into philosophy behind a lot of different religious concepts. So it ended up being a wonderful conversation. Honestly, one of my favorite ones that I've recorded recently. And I think you guys are definitely going to enjoy it because there's a little bit of something for everybody. Before we get into it today, of course, we have to do news and updates and front of house. Trying to make it so that we get a little bit more support for the show as far as making it so it can sustain itself a little bit more. I've fallen onto a time where I'm having a little bit of financial hardship, and I'm hoping to be able to do a little bit more with the show in order to alleviate that a little bit. I know that I took a big hit on Patreon people recently. I'm trying to get that back up, trying to figure out exactly what you guys want as far as the Patreon. So again, I need some feedback from you guys for the designs and for the Patreon. Let me know exactly what you guys want over there so that I can give you guys guys more of the content that you guys dig. It's kind of hard with the shows because when I have such great guests on, I really don't want to put them behind a paywall. So, I mean, I can go one of two ways. Either I can keep trying to push the Patreon and make it so that there's exclusive content that's just for the Patreon. Or on the other side, I can go to the value for value model if you guys want to have everything unlocked and make it so that you guys can access every single episode, which is what I would prefer to do because I hate putting stuff behind paywalls. But you guys got to let me know what you want to do. And guys, you got to remember to support all of your favorite podcasts if you enjoy listening to them, because eventually it gets to a point where they might end up going away if we don't get a little bit more support as far as podcasts go. And moving into front of house, if anybody has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. No matter how big, no matter how small, I definitely want to hear about them. And depending on what you want to do with them, either one, I could have you as a guest on the show to talk about it. I could have your encounter right in the beginning of the show and I can give my thoughts and opinions on him. Or if you guys don't want your encounter being told to anybody at all on the internet, you guys can just let me know, and I am more than happy to just be able to sit and talk with you guys about this kind of stuff because I'm always here to be a listening ear. But if you guys are relatively close, I may even be able to come out and investigate it myself, which would be absolutely awesome because I love being able to meet you guys. But none of that stuff will happen unless you report those encounters to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com or go to the link tree and fill out the submission form that says report an encounter. And if you guys enjoy this show, please go check out my other show. I know you guys have heard me talk about this for the past couple of years, but for anybody that enjoys this show, I definitely think you guys will enjoy that show over there. A little bit different from the format of this show, that it is me and Oren deep diving into topics that we research ourselves. Sometimes we have guests on, but all kind of within the same realm. And we also do a YouTube/Patreon exclusive show called Bizarre Inquiries, where we take in your guys' listener questions and let our minds wander. So if anybody has any questions that you guys would like us to discuss, whether it's something philosophical, even just thoughts and opinions, maybe even just some free conversation on, you know, some of our favorite stuff, you guys can submit those questions. And of course, we will give you a big shout out on the show if we end up using your question, which I guarantee you we'll probably use your question no matter what it is, as long as it's not something that's outright ridiculous and just intended to be stupid. But sometimes those are fun, so maybe we'll use those ones too. And if you guys want to support the show, I'd already talked about supporting the Patreon. Over there, I have 7-day free trial for at least two of the tiers. There probably will be some updates coming on over there. But again, make sure you guys give me your opinions on stuff so I can alter that to fit what you guys want more. And I already also mentioned the OMM merch store. So don't forget to go and check that out if you want to pick up some of the awesome designs that I work on for not just the podcast, but also cryptid/UFO/any bizarre type design that I feel like working on. And the third way you guys can support the show is through leaving a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. It's been a while since I've gotten a written review on iTunes. So if any of you guys that have been listeners for a while want to submit one of those, that would be absolutely fantastic. I love reading on the show. It's one of my favorite things to do. And it also helps out the show because it'll boost up in the algorithm, make it so that more people are able to see the show, and make it so that I can get even more awesome guests to come on and talk about their encounters and just their perspective on a lot of different things in this world. Or our reality, as the title of the show says, of course. And to stay up to date on the show, you guys can check out Inquiries of Our Reality and Open Minds Media on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mention is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome back to the show, Vicky Joy Anderson. How's it going today?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Not too bad, actually. Looking forward to this conversation. I know last time, it wasn't even too long ago that you were on, we actually had some stuff towards the end that we wanted to kind of dive into a little bit this time. So I figured, you know, while we're still spinning around in our heads and everything, it'd be a good thing to get back into it sooner rather than later. So here we are about a month and a half later, and hopefully getting back into the tail end of what we're getting into last time.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this. This will be fun.
So I guess because you weren't on too long ago, not too long of an introduction, but if you kind of want to give people a little bit of your background, tell them a little bit about your book and everything before we get rolling into the conversation today. And then once we get rolling, I'll kind of let you take the reins at first, and then we'll kind of just let it organically develop, I guess.
Okay, very cool. Well, Vicky Joy Anderson, I'm a writer, a researcher, and I speak at conferences and stuff like that. My most recent book, They Only Come Out at Night, is about sleep paralysis. And I'm not a one-trick pony. I mean, I've written that book and I really, really enjoyed the research, and I'll probably at some point write more on it. But I really it's not just like paranormal and supernatural stuff I like. I like fringe stuff. I love conspiracy stuff. I love current events and how they may or may not tie prophetically into the scriptures. I like to dive deep into the Greek and Hebrew of the scriptures and try to see, like, where are we at in the timeline? And I'm just pretty much a curious person. You know, I'm not one of these Christians that as soon as you say something that's slightly out of the purview of the way I was raised, I get super, super angry and, you know, got to pull a stick out of my butt. when people say things to me that are new, I really want to know where they're coming from. Like, wait, now what are you talking about? Simulation? Wait, what? Parallel universes? Like what? Like, I'm really interested in things way above my pay grade. Like, I, you know, I'm not a physicist, but when people start talking about the quantum stuff and the, you know, the quantum computers and the AI, I just love all that stuff. And so it's not that I can speak intelligently on all of those things, but I am of great interest. I have a great interest in those things. And I think that there is a lot more supernatural, technological, mind-blowing stuff in the Bible than the average pastor wants to preach about. So anytime I hear something like really bizarre, rather than cutting someone off and getting cognitive dissonance, I really want to dive in and say, like, hey, well, where'd you get that from? What did you read? And what are you talking about? And so I really do have an interest in talking to people who were raised and have much different worldviews than I. You know, whenever I sit down with someone who's into the New Age or was into the New Age or who is in the occult or was into the occult, I've got a million questions for them. And I'll tell you one thing, not only have I learned a lot from these people, but you get a really cool, eclectic collection of friends. And, you know, I know there's aspects of the scripture that are narrow, but it doesn't mean we have to be narrow-minded.
No, I definitely agree. That's one thing that I gotta say that I really enjoy about, like, the New Age Christian is the fact that, like, I grew up Catholic and it was very strict where you, like, don't ask any questions or anything and you kind of just follow the words and what it says and then you don't really expand past that. And I mean, I remember a lot of the religions kind of being like that even, you know, like 30 years ago. And it seems like nowadays, even with some of the new people that I've been talking to that are just opening up their own churches, things like that, it seems like they're a lot more open to a lot more of these open concepts. But I don't even necessarily think it's an open concept, like they kind of have to make it fit into the paradigm. I think it's a matter of, with the past, with less of an understanding of science, people relied a lot more on faith at the time, where now we have this mixture of science and we have a mixture of faith. So it's almost like the church kind of has to progress as we have an understanding of the natural world around us. And if there's not that progression, then it's not growing as a church. And realistically, I mean, the way that I usually throw it is that when the Bible was written, it was just using words that they understood to try to describe things that were indescribable. But now with the language expanding, now we have better words to try to describe some of the things that they're seeing. And now we're able to start making these real world connections. And if you're not able to do that, then you're not necessarily helping the religion. Otherwise, people are going to think it's one of those things where, like, as you're more educated, you know, you kind of lose track of religion. But when you start coming back around to it, you start realizing that a lot of the stuff that it talks about in the Bible is connected with sciences. And again, it's just their way of describing things that they had no words to describe at the time. And I feel like that's why there's a new wave of the Christian movement now, is because people are understanding that there is a connection between the things talked about in the Bible and actual sciences.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm probably treading on some dangerous ground here, because when, you know, when we think of Jesus, we think of the guy in the sandals, right? And we can kind of relate to him because he was in a human body and interacted with us. But when you think of, like, God the Father on the throne, none of us really know what this being looks like. You know, we can't really comprehend it. And when you think of it in terms of quantum physics and all the kind of sciences that we know a lot more about now, when you read descriptions like God is light, in him there's no darkness at all, and things like that, you tend to think more cosmically. And I don't mean this in a New Age way, but you think of frequencies and energies and this incomprehensible being. Like, what exactly is this being? And so I think that the more we learn about the speed of light and quantum physics and all that, I think the more we're going to be able to get a realistic picture of who exactly are we dealing with? This puppeteer of the universe. Like, I think that this antiquated idea that it's this Santa Claus-like guy with a beard sitting up on a big fancy chair holding thunderbolts, you know, I think we're going to start moving away from that. And we're going to start understanding God from more of a quantum understanding. Now, this doesn't mean we reduce him to a thing instead of a being. It doesn't mean we remove his characteristics or his motives or his emotions. You know, I do think we're dealing with something bigger than a quantum computer or an energy or a frequency. But it's just interesting that the more we uncover about science and the universe, the more some of those things, like you said, that seem really basic in scripture, like God is light. You know, we know a lot more about what light is than we did, you know, 500 years ago. And we know the speed of it and we know formulas. And when you actually grasp how big and fast and all these other components of light, and then you transfer those characteristics onto someone who has described himself as being light, I just think we're rounding out. I'm hoping that we're going to get something a little bit better than a stodgy old grumpy guy on a throne who just likes to, you know, ruin people's day when they don't do stuff they're supposed to.
I mean, I think that like it can be seen two ways. And of course, people are going to make the argument about using the terminology God is light. I mean, if you're looking at it from potentially one scientific standpoint, you could mention the fact that, you know, life wouldn't have been created without sunlight itself, and referring to the sun itself and the sun bringing light to everything and actually getting rid of darkness and actually making it so that life can exist on the planet definitely has to be something that you throw out there. But on the other side of it, of course, I definitely think that, you know, people talk about God as almost like this, like human-like, I don't want to say human-like, but like humanoid type being. And at least from my understanding of it, if something had the capacity to be able to create the universe, create the world, create life, all of this, I don't think that it's something that's restrained to that sort of like a vessel. I think that it's something that's bigger and beyond that. And even being a creator being as a whole, I don't think it's necessarily even something that is a he or necessarily a she either. I think that it's something that's beyond that, because if it has the ability to create, there's not necessarily a need for it to have a reproductive system. So it wouldn't inherently be male or female. It would just be some type of cosmic type consciousness that's able to create life and create the universe. And I feel like this is where a lot of like the Christian and the New Age stuff, it starts to kind of blend together, where you have a lot of these people that were New Agers that are coming into Christianity and kind of, I don't want to say vice versa, but kind of bringing like New Age concepts into New Age Christianity. Yeah. I think it's because they're kind of starting to see that this universal consciousness that a lot of the New Agers talk about and God itself could potentially be the same being. The only thing is with the whole New Age concept, people aren't necessarily going towards always like the light aspect of it. They kind of just pray towards whatever nature type being might be around, because obviously with like the New Age stuff, Gaia is like a huge aspect of that. But on the other side of it too, I mean, if you are potentially looking at it as God is a male, maybe there is a reason why they've used the terminology of God as being a male. In order to create, there would still have to be that female counterpart. So maybe there is a weird part where if the earth itself is female and God himself is a male, together they are able to create light, life. And also going back into that being a metaphor for something, you know, you have the egg, so to speak, which would be the planet, and then you have the sun, which would be like the thing that fertilizes the egg and makes it so that life can exist. And it could still be a big metaphorical thing that, again, they're just trying to describe things with what they understand. But at least from my experiences in life, all the weird supernatural things that I've been through, I definitely sway and have swayed for a long time towards God and universal consciousness that a lot of these different things speak of are all what I believe is the same thing. And I think that all of these different holy books, all of these different religions, I think all of them are the same events, but they're different viewpoints from different perspectives. And from those different viewpoints from different perspectives, of course, you have to bring in the whole fallen angels concept. And of course, some of those religions were written from the fallen angels perspective, because they wanted people to worship them too. So again, you kind of have to look at it from that aspect too, that there are things that are purposely written to make somebody look like a bad guy and somebody look like a good guy. So, I mean, it's this back and forth of different perspectives and just trying to put all these giant pieces together to create this puzzle that we're all been trying to figure out since the beginning of time, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
So here's my theory, and I'm not dogmatic about this. I'm not going to chisel it into stones and, you know, tell everybody to follow it. So Christians, you know, settle down. I'm just postulating something here. But what's really interesting about Genesis 1:1, the very first thing is, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. But the sun, the moon, and the stars aren't actually created until day four. So this light that is coming into being before the creation process starts is something different than the sun. And I think the clue, the cipher to what that light is in Psalm 104. Psalm 104 is a poetic retelling of the creation story. And at the beginning, it says that God wraps himself in light as in a garment. So it's this metaphor of him putting on a jacket, like that's made of light, right? So what I think we're actually seeing is before the creation of man, we have an invisible God. We have this invisible creator. And I think what's happening, when he said, let there be light, what I think is happening is the pre-incarnate Messiah, the guy who's going to come, you know, thousands of years later as Jesus, right? An aspect of God is manifesting out of his invisibility. And the way that we can see him is God is wrapping it in light. So I think that this thing that's being wrapped in light, when God said, let there be light, and there was light, in essence, I think the pre-incarnate Messiah, the manifestation of his son, was actually being birthed at that moment, and he was being robed in light. When he comes the second time, he's wrapped in swaddling clothes, right? The first time he is manifested, he comes out of this invisible God as his own second person. He's wrapped in the swaddling clothes of light. And then I believe that it is actually he that creates the world. And that's real controversial because everybody is taught that every time you see God in the Old Testament, it's the Father. And then every time you see it in the New Testament, it's Jesus. And if you go according to the vowel renderings of the Masoretic text, almost every time you see God or Lord in the Old Testament, it's actually talking about the pre-incarnate Messiah. It's not actually talking about God the Father. There's very few references to God the Father. And in fact, there's only three times in the entire scripture where human beings hear the voice of God the Father. So most of our interaction is with the Son. Even this whole idea of God as light, I think it is a description of the pre-incarnate Messiah. Before he had a vessel, before he had flesh, his vessel was this light. And the God as light, if you actually do the etymology of that, we're more than likely talking about the pre-incarnate Messiah more so than we are the God that we know as the creator.
I mean, if you're looking at it from that perspective, too, for lack of a better term, for a metaphor, you could almost kind of view God as not necessarily, I don't want to say like a physical, semi-physical, like universal consciousness, but rather a force that kind of exists around everything. And again, for the lack of a better term, for a metaphor, like the force in Star Wars is this existing force that kind of controls and exists around everything, but it doesn't have a physical version of itself. But theoretically, it could manifest a physical version of itself, which is where you get like the force ghost, so to speak. So, I mean, that could almost be somewhat of an explanation to it, is that God isn't necessarily in any particular place, but everywhere all at once and exists through everything. And that's how he's able to communicate with us, is through existing through everything. And if he needs to, kind of manipulating the reality he created in order to create like a physical vessel for his son, so to speak.
Yeah, but this whole concept of omnipresence, when you live in a physical world, it's really hard to get your mind around that, right? It's like, how big would this thing have to be to consume every square inch of the universe, right? So there has to be something in that concept. If we believe in omnipresence, if we embrace that, there has to be something cosmic to that, because obviously it's not a guy that's just that fat, right? You know, so what exactly does that mean? And that's what gets so frustrating about a lot of these concepts when you're trying to put God or in a descriptive box. And that also is where a lot of the errors and the opportunities for the guys you were talking about, you know, the guys that want to come down and make it look like, well, we're the gods and he's the bad guy. We really, because of our lack of ability to understand or grasp or communicate some of these things, that's really where room for error and deception comes in as well. Because you can say God is everywhere, and then you can take it a step further, because he's everywhere and in everything, then we can worship everything, and then everything's God. And then you've got this weird, you know, Old Testament concept where people were bowing down to the sun and the moon and the celestials and the steles and the black rocks. And, you know, well, if God's everywhere, then he's in this rock. So if I'm bowing down to this rock, then I'm bowing down to the one true God. But, you know, we know that that wasn't really what was happening. So there's a lot of room for deception in our inability as human beings to really put accurate communication around some of these concepts.
That is very true. And I mean, connecting into something you kind of slightly brought up in the beginning that I definitely want to dive into, because I always find it kind of fascinating, the whole simulation theory kind of potentially connecting in with all of this stuff. Because say we created some type of like reality inside of our reality, assumably the function in that reality is going to be different than our reality. And in turn, we're going to be able to manipulate and completely control that reality also. So, I mean, you could definitely look at the biblical perspective of things as being a simulation, that we're in some type of organic simulation, so to speak, and that God himself is the creator of that simulation. But because it's a way more complicated reality than what we exist in, because of course you're not going to be able to create a reality as complex as your reality, you're going to create a simplified reality inside your reality, potentially like we would kind of do. They're unfathomable to how they exist. They're in another dimension. They're these interdimensional beings that have, you know, rotating eyes with different wheels and all this kind of stuff that we just simply can't fathom. And I mean, that could kind of also link into the whole flat earth in the old Bible concept versus if we're living on a globe earth now, is just like in a video game, if a map gets created, you know, you're essentially going to start with this little square map. And then as you create more people and as you need more space, then you start expanding the map out. So this is a theory that I throw at a lot of people that are flat earth, that because usually most of the time when people use the flat earth stuff, they usually kind of come back to like a biblical perspective on things. I mean, they could potentially both be right, that there was a flat earth at one point and now there's a globe earth because it needed to be rendered as more people existed and more space needed to expand. And if that is potentially right, again, we could be living inside of a simulation or an organic simulation. And even in the beginning of the Bible, they talk about how there was just black and nothingness, and then everything was created within that black and nothingness. It almost kind of sounds like a empty reality, like a void space that somebody was able to create and exist in. And I mean, that's even potentially another thing too, is that if there was something that figured out how to create a reality and it wasn't necessarily a simulation, if there was a void space and something had that potential to be able to do that, it's unfathomable and it's godlike to us, but to that reality where that thing came from, that may not necessarily be a godlike ability. It might just be what they naturally do. And if that is the case, I mean, when it comes into a lot of this like alien perspective that people have that, you know, kind of semi fits into the biblical paradigm, sometimes doesn't, people kind of associate as demons, this, that, you know, maybe these extraterrestrials that are coming from other dimensions might be other realities that have been created, and be it by the same God, the same being, or by other beings that are of the same race or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that could potentially be just little creation projects and coming from inside of this reality that was created. We're of course going to look up to that thing like it's God, because it is our God, because it created all of us. The same as if we create a reality, whatever things exist in that reality would look up to whoever created their reality as God also, because they wouldn't be able to fathom how that was created also. Sorry, yeah, got a little bit kind of deep there, but
it's like the Matryoshka dolls, you know, the Russian dolls, where it
exactly
just kind of keeps getting. Yeah. Well, so a couple interesting things. And again, I'm going against the traditional seminary taught Christian narrative. But if you get into some of like the Gary Waynes and the Michael Heisers, they have postulated some theories that I think are really fascinating. And that is, if you really carefully read Genesis 1 and you read Genesis 2, and what we're taught in the church is Adam and Eve are the people being created in Genesis 1. And when we go to Genesis 2, it's kind of like we're just putting, you know, a magnifying glass over it. And we're just rehashing and giving greater detail to what we've already said. That's kind of, and I actually have an agnostic friend to thank for this. Years before I was red-pilled, he said, well, the Bible can't be true because Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 are two totally different creation stories. And I'm like, no, they're not. And I spit out my little, you know, one is under the microscope, blah, 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 right? And he's like, Vic, he's like, the order of the creation is in different orders. Like, you know, the animals are created on this day, and in this world and this rendering, it's another day. And I was so upset. I had the cognitive dissonance and like, you're going against the narrative, right? But years later, when I heard, I don't know if it was Gary Wayne. It might've been Gary Wayne. And I was like, wait, what? So I actually did what I should have done the first time. I actually did what I should have done years ago. And I went and I got my Bible and I read Genesis 1:1, and I wrote down the days, like I made the notes, and then I read Genesis 2, and I realized this is not the same place. This is clearly taking place after the day of rest. Then God goes to this and makes this garden, and he starts creating things that were already created. So why are you creating them again? If you actually read it carefully, and especially if you're going into the Hebrew, it's two different renderings. And so the fall actually makes more sense. If I'll use Gary Wayne's terminology, the men and women who were created plural in Genesis 1, man and woman, he created them and he told them to be fruitful and multiply. Now, them is one of those weird words in English where just Adam and Eve, just two people could be them. But there's no mention of names or Adam or Eve or anything in Genesis 1. It's just a, let's make man in our own image. And man at that point just meant of the terrestrial realm. It didn't mean, it didn't carry a gender. Let us make Adam in our own image. And male and female, he created them and he told them to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And so Gary Wayne calls them the day six creation. Then after they were doing their thing, up in the spiritual realm, within the realm of Mount Zion, in the heavenly realm, he creates Adam. So Adam was not really terrestrial at that point. He was a representative of the divine council from Psalm 82, and Mike Heiser talks about that. And when Adam fell, there was no longer a representative sitting on the panel up in the heavenly realm to vouch for mankind, which is why Jesus came as the second Adam. So when Adam fell, I think it was a literal fall from the spiritual realm down to the earthly realm. And their punishment was that they became these day six creation, and they were occupying the same space as these lesser terrestrial beings. And what's interesting too is we all have these crazy doctrines that pastors try to make sense of that never make sense. When Cain murdered his brother, he goes to a city and he's afraid that the people will murder him. Where's all these cities all of a sudden? Cities full of people who are murderers? And then it's the whole like, well, he must have married his sister and Adam and Eve somehow populated the whole earth. And she like, you know, they mated like rabbits. And it just makes a whole lot more sense if you think that Adam and Eve were a special creation. They were representatives of mankind. You know, there was like a UN of sorts up in the heavenlies, and sitting on this at this boardroom table was a representative of all of the creations. Here's a watcher. Here's an angel. Here's a man. And when Adam destroyed his role there on the divine council, he lost his job. He got fired. He got relegated down to the rest of men. And then they had to appoint a second Adam, which wound up eventually being Jesus. So from that perspective, if you look at it, if the Garden of Eden was originally where we were walking in the garden with God and they saw him face to face because they were occupying the same space, and all of a sudden they couldn't see God anymore and didn't walk with him anymore, it would also make sense that they're now on this terrestrial realm. He's still up in the spirit realm. So from that standpoint, going back to what you're saying, and it's taken me a long time to get there, is from that standpoint, where we are now would be a simulation because it's a recreation. It's a plan B. It's where we were cast out of our first estate. So we're already on a second iteration of where we were originally designed to be and live out our days.
I mean, another possible perspective you can look at that from too is if you're looking at it from the perspective that you're kind of explaining with Adam being more of like a representative, if he created the Garden of Eden, the way that he explains and then casts him down from that, couldn't it potentially be that the Garden of Eden wasn't necessarily like a human reality, but rather actually part of like heaven itself? And yes, it still may potentially exist in heaven itself. Yes. It's just humans weren't allowed in it. Or yes, from the other perspective too, if you were a creator being and you're trying to figure out how exactly you want to like construct your reality, so to speak, maybe it's potential that you could do kind of like two experiments, so to speak, that you put one in this perfect reality and then you put the rest in this reality where it's pretty much like a free for all. They can kind of just do as they please and kind of go about their days, and you kind of experiment on both to figure out how you're going to go about constructing a reality. Like, you could either give them the perfect place to always be and there's not necessarily any kind of growth or anything happening because everything is constant, everything is beautiful, everything is just this constant flow. And in turn from that, again, there's no growth, there's no development of those people. And realistically, if you create a race of beings, you'd want to see them flourish and get better and progress and, you know, just essentially just keep overcoming obstacles and just becoming a better version of themselves.
Yeah.
No, maybe it was one of those things where he created that, realized that, and basically decided that, all right, this other experiment where everything is perfect, I don't think this is going to work, you know, because if God controls everything, you know, there may have been some other thing with the serpent to see if, even though they're in a perfect reality, if they're still going to fall to temptation. And if they still fall to temptation, then you might as well just let them go down with the rest and just go about their personal growth and actually develop on their own rather than you kind of giving them every single thing that they need. So, I mean, maybe that's possibly the perspective of it, is that it was more like an experiment to almost figure out how you want to let your humans go about their life and learn and progress, or again, just have a perfect reality to always exist in.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
You know, what's not really satisfying to me, we can talk about where was the Garden of Eden, who was there, and was there two different creations, and where is Earth, and where... The fact of the matter is, regardless of what answer you give me, it still doesn't really get God off the hook. It still poses the question that's difficult for theologians to answer and difficult for people to grasp, and that is, why would God create something if he knew the whole thing was going to go to seed and get this bad, like all the stuff that's going on down here and the wars and everything? And, you know, I have heard a lot of doctrines coming through the ages where we're kind of trying to get God off the hook for, you know, why he would create something that would go this bad. And a lot of the doctrines do more harm than good, you know, because you can strip him of his sovereignty. Well, he didn't know it was going to happen, you know, or, you know, things like that. But what's fascinating to me about this Garden of Eden, because I don't think we have it figured out at all. And I think the whole Tigris and Euphrates River, you know, the four rivers that go through Eden, I think it's sort of a red herring that we have a Tigris and a Euphrates down here on Earth. I have a hunch we named them after the original. I don't think we've ever seen... The reason why we don't know where the other two rivers are is because we don't know where any of them are. And I don't know if you've ever heard of... I got a buddy named Joel Thomas, and he's on social media, and I'm pretty sure he's got... socials and websites, and he's on the confessionals a lot. He's a buddy of Merkel. And Joel, I've heard Joel talking about the Garden of Eden as this somewhat dimensional space that can float in and out of the physical reality. So there were times on Earth where we could have traversed there and it would have been there. But right now, if we went there, it would not be there. But it's almost like... So, for example, the Garden of Eden is talked about in Genesis 1, right? But it's also referenced in Ezekiel, where it talks about the king of Tyre, who we know is the Satan character, and it talks about how when Satan fell, and it talks about how he walked among the fiery stones, and Ezekiel describes it as the Garden of Eden. But it's pre-Garden of Eden. This was a Garden of Eden that existed before the Garden that Adam and Eve were in. And I liked what you said earlier about, well, there's this like void space. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, Shane, because if you read the Hebrew, you know, we in English say, well, God created the heavens and the earth, you know, ex nihilo, out of nowhere. But really the palette was already there, because if you go to the Hebrew, it uses the word tohu and bohu for this creative process. It actually means he reformed it. And the reason why it was in a state of darkness and chaos is whatever was there originally got destroyed. So now we have this whole concept of, was there pre-Adamite, was there a pre-Adamite existence? And if so, was it humans? If not, what was it? And if there was one pre-Adamite civilization on Earth that got destroyed, maybe there was two. Maybe there was three. Maybe by the time Noah's flood came around, maybe the reason why God said, okay, you know what? I'm throwing the brakes on this. I'm not going to do this anymore. I promise to never flood the earth again. Maybe the reason he made that promise and sealed it with a covenant is because maybe that space, that palette, maybe it had been destroyed 5, 6, 7, 8 times already. And so we're now living in the seventh or the eighth iteration of whatever it was that was built on this space. And, you know, and then that opens up all these possibilities. You know, we always talk about, well, Jesus is going to come back and then we all go to heaven and it all ends. And it's like, you know, does it all end, or does this just keep getting repeated over? How many times is this place going to get destroyed? So it's just, it's fascinating to me. I love thinking about all of these possibilities that are outside of the box of the traditional stuff that we learn in church. But sometimes it just makes your brain do somersaults, because then you just think, if we don't know that, then it just, you come to realize that you really don't know anything, right? And so we have to kind of like check ourselves sometimes, or we might lose our sanity trying to figure some of this stuff out.
Ain't that the truth? I mean, even kind of diving into just a couple different theories and ideas, kind of thought from that.
Yeah.
First one, of course, going back into the Garden of Eden, assumably if, like you were kind of saying, there were multiple realities, multiple groups of civilizations that have lived here before, maybe you need some type of like a seed bank, so to speak. Because we talk about this kind of stuff with, you know, we have that one that's stored in, I think like Antarctica or in Sweden or something like that, where it's like they have one of every single seed just in case anything ever happens. They always have that way to restart everything.
Yeah.
Maybe the Garden of Eden was that almost. It was the place where he kept all of his creations as far as animals, as far as, you know, plants, all of that kind of stuff. So then as these other realities are getting created, he takes his stuff that he already likes how it works. And that's kind of like how he restarts his you know, plant base, so to speak, from there, genetic base almost from there. And then kind of linking into the whole thing you were saying about multiple realities kind of existing before ours too.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think about the angels and where they came from and the reality that they live in and everything too. Assumably, there was this whole inner working that was going on with all of that on top of the human civilization existing. So even if there were multiple civilizations that have been restarted by God himself, I'm sure the angels' civilization, either one was restarted multiple times also, or two may have existed through all of this. And it's a matter of non-interference, that maybe the angels are fully aware of everything that's existed, and I'm sure that they are, but with the new group that comes down, they can only give you so much knowledge because they can't interfere. Because if you have the knowledge of everything that's ever happened before, then it's almost like, for lack of a better term, the experiment can't function properly how it's supposed to. Because it's almost like the idea that, like, if somebody tells you when you're going to die, you're going to live your life this entire different way because you know that exact moment you're going to die. If you want free will to exist, then it's almost like we see from our current events that history is bound to repeat itself. And maybe they see that also, but it's a matter of letting it progress and happen on its own because that's the natural way it's supposed to happen versus everybody moving towards this thing that's going to happen because they already are aware that it's going to happen. It's like they have to just stand back and kind of let things function and exist. And that could be the same for God himself, like you were talking about, where people are saying like God left, so to speak. Maybe it's not necessarily that. Maybe it's almost like the concept where you almost start something up. And then once you create like a biodome or like a biosphere, you do this thing where you just don't touch it and you just kind of let it exist amongst itself. And you realize that there's this weird balance that as one thing may die off, another thing will start to grow. And it just has this back and forth. But if you interfere with it, then you can't watch that natural progression. And honestly, as a creator being, like, if I was to sit and create a reality, I would almost be more fascinated with watching it develop on its own versus always having my hand and poking and prodding and always, okay, this thing isn't quite growing right. Let me just push that back and fix it. It'd almost be better just to sit back and watch your own work exist and unfold all on its own. And if you do know the end plan, which assumably God does in the end, again, without evil, there can't be growth or things that are going to, there can't be progression as like a species. So everybody wonders why there's so much bad in the world. But again, it's intended. Because if it wasn't for that, there wouldn't be an evil force to fight against. So there wouldn't be a means for good. So without evil, there can't be good and there can't be progression and growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There would be so many aspects of God's nature and character that would never be revealed to us if there wasn't evil unleashed in the world. We wouldn't know mercy. We wouldn't know kindness. We wouldn't know. I like what you were saying, though, about we have this concept because really, you know, I'm not going all the way, you know, that the name is eluding me right now, but there's this, you know, kind of like watchmaker theory in theology where God wound up the universe like a clock and then just took off and never came back. And I can't remember the name of the theological distinction for that belief system off the top of my head right now. But anyway, is it universalism? I can't remember. But anyway, I don't take it quite that far, but I think that some of the miracles in the Bible, the reason that they were noteworthy, the reason why it was so amazing when God interfered was because it was so rare. He doesn't come down every 2 seconds and stop everything bad. So we got the Tower of Babel where he says, let's go down there and see what's going on. And then he frustrates the language. You know, we've got Jesus coming down and that we've got a few examples where he kind of like fought for Israel during wars where he'd send hailstones down and whatever. So we do have examples where God did sort of open the windows of heaven and kind of like, you know, okay, kids, I'm coming down there. You know, like there were moments like that. But for the most part, he does let us be, you know, and usually much to our detriment, right? But he doesn't really interfere. But I also want to go back to what you were saying about this. Every time there's like a new graduating class, so to speak, we don't really know what happened three class the three classes ago, right? It's interesting because even Solomon, who is noted as the wisest man who ever lived, his book of Ecclesiastes, which is really sad slash interesting, is he basically says that we really don't have a memory beyond 100 years. And even that stuff gets sketchy. And it's like part of the futility that Solomon was warring with is this fact that how can we know anything if we only know what goes back two or three generations? And it's interesting to me that was a thought in the head of the wisest guy who ever lived. Because when you look at people like you and I who aren't the wisest guys who ever lived, you know, and we're sitting here talking about that. But the average person, they live their life. They get up and, you know, they go to school, they go to college, they get a car, they get married, they have a few kids, they have their grandparents, they die. They don't even question these things. And so what I think is really interesting and fun and exhilarating about the era that you and I are now alive in is we're starting to ask questions that Solomon was asking. And we're starting, and it doesn't, I'm not saying like, hey, we're the wisest generation that ever lived, because, you know, flip on the news and everything would dictate otherwise. But what I'm saying is all of a sudden, mankind in this era is having thoughts that are less futile than the average thoughts. You know, we're not just thinking about our own little pitiful lives. And even amongst non-religious people, we have people wanting answers about the universe and the meaning of it. And so I just think we're in a really unique time. And I think the reason why knowledge is increasing, it's all about supply and demand. Is knowledge increasing because it's being made available to us? Or is knowledge increasing because we're striving for it? We want it. And even there, we have to be careful because Adam and Eve wanted knowledge. And when the watchers came down in Genesis 6, man wanted that knowledge. And people go up into the astral realm because they want that knowledge. And there's knowledge that is not helpful to us. But with knowledge increasing, like we're seeing in this day and age, I believe that the reason it's increasing isn't just because it's just all of a sudden being made available to us because we have the internet. It's being made available to us because we're seeking it. We want to know the answers, and we're maybe on a higher wavelength at this point. And does that mean we're closer to the end? You know, every day we're closer to the end, I guess. I'm not one of these people that thinks, you know, we got 10 years left to live. I think that just exactly what we're talking about, who knows how many times and how many thousands, if not millions of years, this place has reset itself, you know? So,
I mean, to bring up a couple different things, because I had to take notes on this last one, because I had a bunch of different ideas pop in my head. Cool. But as far as like people becoming smarter and having more of like a thirst for knowledge, yeah. I think it's also one of those things that as intelligence progresses through, you know, people that are more on the intelligent side, possibly like reproducing, the same can be said on the less intelligent side, because it seems like a lot of this stuff kind of comes down to like a genetic standpoint too. So I think it's like a matter of, as there's becoming smarter people, there's also becoming stupider people because of just that selection of people as time goes on, you know, like yeah. You're going to have one extreme or another. Like everybody was kind of stationary at one point, but now as people are getting smarter, people are also getting dumber. So you kind of have this like split where like half of society is questioning all of these things and actually wants an understanding of knowledge. And the other half is just so wrapped up in the way society wants them to function that they're just off in their own world and don't even fathom or think about these things because it just gets too deep and too much for their head and they don't even want to think about it.
Yep.
And kind of diving into another thing that I want to kind of discuss was the whole like Solomon concept. And this can kind of go into the whole thing with intent for knowledge and stuff too. Solomon's one of those characters that he's looked up by the Christian perspective. And he's also looked up from the mystical slash like occult perspective.
Yep.
Because he had that quest for knowledge. And in turn, some people kind of feel that he kind of became this evil character and others kind of feel that he became like the wisest man to have ever existed. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to that kind of stuff, I think it's all about intention, so to speak. Because when you talk about Solomon, for example, learning how to control demons, there's two different perspectives you can look at that from. Either one, he's tangling with the dark arts, so to speak, and learning how to make deals and packs and do things with demons. Or on the other side of it, he's learning how to control them. So if you're taking an evil force and making it do things for you that are potentially good, like building the temples, is it really an evil act if you're taking something evil and making it do something good? It's all just a matter of perspective and intent. So when it comes to the quest for knowledge, I don't think necessarily any knowledge is considered like evil knowledge, so to speak, but it's rather the intent behind it. Sure. And that's one of the things that God would fear with knowledge, is how people are going to use it with the matter of free will existing. So if you learn how to learn all of these questions to be able to bring this whole paradigm to a new perspective of people where they can understand Christianity and they push into more of the side of Christianity because they need more of an understanding behind it, then that knowledge isn't intentionally bad. It's actually helping to push people into that perspective again. But if you have the bad intentions, kind of going back and forth with Solomon, just as an example, if you learn how to control demons and you did evil acts, that's evil, bad intention behind it. So of course that knowledge is going to be bad knowledge, so to speak.
Yes.
But if you learn how to control evil things and make them do good things, then that isn't necessarily evil knowledge. It's good knowledge, but again, it's a matter of the user because it can be used both ways. So it's almost like you can't tell everybody they can have this knowledge because half these people are going to use it the good way, the other half are going to use it the bad way. So rather than have to worry about anybody doing that, you kind of just say, this knowledge isn't intended for mankind. I apologize. It's one of those things that, like, maybe when you come to a point where I can trust you with this knowledge, and maybe we're slowly kind of getting to a point like that where we can be trusted with more knowledge, then it'll be presented to us. But while there's that fear of people using it with bad intention, then of course that knowledge is going to be forbidden knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Yeah, you know, I kind of came to a conclusion a year or two ago. You know, there's these mascots that the occult and the secret societies have sort of claimed as their own. You know, you got George Washington and Solomon. Those are like two of the really big examples. But going back to what we were saying about us not really knowing, we can't go back over 200 years. We really don't know what kind of a man George Washington was. We don't know. Our parents don't know. Our grandparents, our great grandparents, we no longer associate with people who were actually there. So history can claim whoever they want as their heroes. And we wouldn't know if this guy was an upright, you know, church attending individual, or if he was some 33 degree Mason, you know. And you can paint stuff on the Capitol ceiling, and you can put him in Masonic garb and put an apron on him, and you can paint up there whatever you want, and then you can tell us a narrative and then we're going to believe it. But the fact is, going along with what you were saying about Solomon, Solomon has sort of been adopted by Freemasonry as sort of like all this knowledge was Masonic knowledge, right? But to your point, we really don't know. We don't know where, I mean, we've sort of, because of that knowledge, I now have a lot of people who are saying in the church that, well, Solomon's probably in hell. He didn't. And when you read Ecclesiastes, like, yeah, he seems kind of insane in that book, but it's a fairly short book. And if, let's say I died and every single thing that had to do with me was wiped off of planet Earth and no one had any access to my photos or my writings or my books or my family members or my journals, and all you had was a poem that I wrote when I was 15 years old in high school and super, super depressed. And that became the whole of, you know, that snapshot in time became how you judge my righteousness or my goodness or my wisdom or the intent behind my wisdom. And so I do think that this idea of trying to claim Solomon as a flaming born again Christian or as a 33 degree Mason at this point in history, you got a 50-50 shot of being right or wrong, you know, or we could both be wrong, you know, who knows? But I do think that I like what you're saying about the intent, because, and this makes a lot of Christians queasy, Moses knew occult knowledge. Okay, he was raised in Pharaoh's court. He was trained. So you know he knew all about the Book of the Dead. And, you know, you think it's just a coincidence that he's throwing his staff and it's turning into a serpent, and that the other guys could do the same thing? They were all trained in those dark arts. Moses had knowledge of that stuff. Now, I'm not saying that it wasn't reclaimed or repurposed later, but Joseph, second in command in Babylon, you think he didn't know dark arts? You think that those magis that he was, you know, with, or Daniel, who was interpreting dreams and worked with the magis in the courts of these Babylonian kings, very often God put his people in key places, which meant they were rubbing shoulders with magicians and people who were very familiar with the occult. And so they had knowledge of it, and they even used it to some degree, but it doesn't mean that they were using it with the same intent. Joseph, he talks about, you know, the cup that he kept putting in his brother Benjamin's sack as a way of, like, you know, psyching out his brothers. He called it a divination cup. What's Joseph, the born again Christian, doing with a divination cup, right? And in apocryphal texts like Jasher, if you read the fuller account of that story of Joseph, he's got Benjamin alone in a room, and Benjamin knows his brother's alive, and they're in Egypt, in fact, looking for their brother. And Joseph calls for a map of the stars to be brought to him, which is like the zodiac to us, right? They called it the Maseroth, but it was the same thing. And using the map of the stars, because Benjamin knew how to read it, because he'd been taught that mysterious art, he was able to deduce that the man sitting before him was actually his brother Joseph. And so the Maseroth is actually an excellent example of what you're saying, Shane. You have got the Maseroth or the zodiac. It's the same star chart. Some people use it to read fortunes, and some people use it to divine the unfolding of redemptive history. The sun, the moon, and the stars were put into the sky as moedim, as signs, and for seasons. That's written right in Genesis 1. So the stars do tell a story, and Genesis tells us that the stars tell a story. And this is seen all throughout Scripture. The Magi, the wise men, knew where to find Jesus. They knew when he was born because they were reading a star map. So is the star map what's evil? Or does it depend on who's holding that star map and what they're using it for?
I mean, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to get at with it too, is that theoretically, well, not even theoretically, but if God created the heavens, he created the stars. So mm-hmm. In turn, if you're following something that he created, it can't necessarily be evil knowledge to understand the stars itself. And it's a matter, again, if people are trying to use it to try to, you know, foresee the future and trying to use it for means that was not necessarily intended to, even though it may still be usable for those types of things. And even going into, you know, like the birth of Christianity, realistically, like, all spirituality came through mysticism. And when you start looking at the really, really old stuff in the Bible, I mean, even now, I mean, you use an altar at church. I mean, you have an altar when you go into all of these other things too, that are mystical and the occult. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just a matter of kind of playing it a different way, that people separated the mysticism part from Christianity just because they started looking at mysticism and the occult like it was completely the enemy, when it still exists within it. It's just a matter of, this is what became normal from this perspective. So you kind of just blank it out, even though, again, you're still using the same terminology, such as altar, for example. And I mean, think about how much of the Bible took place in Egypt and how much Egypt had an understanding of occult knowledge. And that's where, like, the birth of all the mystery schools and everything were. Yep. So everybody that was living in Egypt, again, they would have had somewhat of an understanding of it, just living in that area and having to be up to date, so to speak, with what the religion of that particular area was at the time, which of course would have been, you know, the Egyptian religion at the time, which is all, again, kind of born into, like, mysticism and the occult.
Oh yeah.
So like, you're having an understanding of this while you're also Hebrew at the time, you know, because it was before Christianity as we know it today. So you're still combining these two concepts to bring in what your understanding is of mainstream Christianity today. Again, it's just separating different concepts because, you know, like I said, it's just like using the word altar and stuff like that. You separate it in your mind because it's become so uniform and standard to you that anything that seems occult is thrown off. But if it's within your own religion, then you don't connect the dots and you don't even think about it. You just kind of pass over it and don't realize it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You know, we sort of have this concept in modernity, at least here in the West, where if something is bad, or if something has been, let's not even the right way. let's say if something has become abused, the only way to handle it, the only way to balance the scales is to never, ever, ever touch or mention that thing again. So I'll like just give the example of alcohol. If someone abuses alcohol, they never, ever drink it again. And therefore, no one in the church should ever, 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 ever drink it again because it has this potential for abuse, even though not everybody has the potential to be addicted to it in that way, because not everyone has the same inclination. So when you take something like alcohol and you say, no one in the church can ever drink it again, we have to be teetotalers, every single one of us, because some of us can't handle it. You know, it's this complete and utter abstinence rather than just using something responsibly, right? And I find the same way when you deal with things that the occult has perhaps hijacked, that instead of gleaning out of it what part originally belonged to the church or what part originally belonged to God, the whole entire thing just gets thrown out. So we've already used the examples with the star map, but the astral realm is another one. Now, I'm not saying go into the astral realm and talk with deities up there and whatever, but a lot of Christians don't realize that the Bible actually mentions the astral plane, but they just don't use that word. But if you go into the Greek in Ephesians 6:12, the epiraneos is the heavenly places, the high places. And if you actually go into the lexicons, that'll tell you specifically, it's not the third heaven throne room, and it's not the sun, moon, and stars in the earthly sky. It's this dimension in between. So it's not saying go there, but it is acknowledging that it exists. And I see a lot in Christianity that if you say astral plane, they either have no idea what you're talking about because the church has never even taught that it exists. Or you've got people that like, okay, we can't talk about this. This is evil. This is evil. Well, God created that plane. Now, it might be infested with things that we shouldn't be talking to. But if you're a Christian and you're ignorant that that place exists or you don't know what it is, then you're also ignorant of your enemies, because it says that the archons and the principalities and the spiritual forces of wickedness and darkness in the high places have thrones in that place. So it's really to our detriment to have to abolish and ban and fact check and delete and shadow ban everything in the Bible that's supernatural, because the Bible is extremely supernatural, and we've just lost sight of it because we have lost sight of the culture and the context and the history and the language and the geography of what's in there. We read the whole text as if Paul was, you know, born in Los Angeles in 1984. You know what I mean? Like, we're trying to ascribe all sorts of modern Western Christianity to the things that he was saying. And I dare say if Paul came and visited one of our churches these days, even if you preached out of one of the books that he wrote, he would not recognize what was being taught. In fact, he would probably think he was in a pagan temple.
I mean, even going back to like early religion, of course, just some more examples too. I mean, burning incense, for example, definitely mm-hmm. looked at as a New Age thing, but it's also something that you do with
in the temple.
Yeah, in the temple. Rituals the temple. As a whole. I mean, you hear the term ritual and you instantly assume something pagan or something occult. But anytime you go to church and you're burning incense and you're singing certain songs and you're doing certain verses, realistically, that's also a ritual. It's just a different variation of a ritual. But again, absolutely, you separate these things so that you don't feel like you're doing the same thing, but it's all rooted and based in the same place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Everything. Like, even if you read about like manifestation, you could get really uncomfortable as a Christian reading that and thinking, how is this different than faith and prayer? You know, and there's ways to split those hairs. And with the nuances, I think, again, it goes back to intent. And it also goes back to what God are you worshiping, yourself or something. So they're not the same. But if you're just looking at the words and the description, and again, this is why it is so easy for deception to come into the church. And tons of it has come into the church because people don't know. They're taught what to believe, but they really don't know why, and they really don't know what's behind it, and they really can't do the research for themselves. And a lot of the sermons, like, imagine if you went to a university to get a degree so that you could qualify for a job. And what if instead of having a teacher that taught you physics or taught you algebra, you just sat around for 45 minutes in class and all talked about how you felt about algebra, or how do you feel about physics? What has physics done for you? Why did you decide to take physics? It, that's what's happening in the church now. We aren't being taught doctrine and theology and history and culture and language. We're taking this up in the Bible. We're using it as sort of just self-help tools, things to make us feel better, things to have good discussions on. And I'm not throwing every church in the world in that bucket. There's great pastors out there. And I know several of them. But we've turned it into using the book as basically a spiritual DSM-5 to help heal all of our mental and physical maladies of anxiety and depression. And we're not really being taught in the church anymore how to read the Greek, how to read the Hebrew, how to actually use a Greek Strong's dictionary, how to actually research culturally what was going on in this text. And there's whole books that are being preached in the churches that aren't even what the book is even about. And we don't even understand it because we're culturally removed by 2,000 years.
I mean, getting into the whole Solomon thing again, it almost kind of makes you wonder if you have to take in human corruption as a factor, that maybe the progression of how the religion was intended to go was possibly more towards like what Solomon was doing, where you learn how to control these demons, you learn how to make them do your bidding for you, and you make them do good, things like that. But the people that were in charge of everything were like, all right, we can't trust everybody to be able to do this kind of stuff, so we need to separate this. So maybe it was almost something along the lines of the church one day that they kind of separated Solomon intentionally to make him look like he was a cult, to make it look like that's not what you do, because they didn't want people to have that knowledge because they still wanted to be able to kind of just keep the, this is what we do, this is how we function, this is what we do. Everybody just, you know, we're doing this to feel good, we're doing this to be one with God, all this kind of stuff, but not realizing that, again, maybe the progression of the religion was supposed to be what Solomon does, where we learn how to control evil and we learn how to stop evil ourselves. And of course, I mean, there's a lot of people that talk about this, that, you know, you can pray over somebody that's demon possessed and you can invoke that demon back out and everything. So we have those powers to do that. So again, maybe that was the intention of the religion in the first place, and it was human interference that kind of separated us from the full potential of like the mystical side of Hebrew/Christianity.
Yeah. Well, and wouldn't it just make sense? It's the whole, like, if you can't beat them, join them concept, right? If Solomon had gained some sort of wisdom or power or authority over darkness in his era, and he was gaining ground, much the way Jesus was gaining ground when he had authority over the demons in the first century. And what did they do? They got rid of him, right? So, I mean, Solomon lived so many thousands of years ago that now, if the Masons and certain secret societies was like, we hate Solomon, he's a bad guy, you know, it would give away the fact that, hey, maybe we should pursue Solomon's wisdom. Maybe they knew something. But if they say like, no, he was one of our guys and he was teaching, you know, the Masonic law and whatever, then no one wants to pursue Solomon, including the Christians, right? Because, oh, he was an evil guy. So I think if Solomon was a good guy till the end, what they've done, it was actually very clever in making him the mascot. You know, I mean, even, you know, the two pillars in Masonic symbology, like the Joachim and the Boaz, those were the pillars of Solomon's temple. Like, they are claiming him as their boy, you know? And so it's very clever. If the son of King David, I mean, I recognize that our progeny doesn't always follow in our footsteps. And there's a lot of pastor kids that definitely aren't going to grow up and be pastors. But Solomon was raised by King David, who was a man after God's own heart. So this is a guy who understood who the true God was. And it's sort of a stretch for me to think that in one generation, as soon as his dad died, he went into full-blown occultism. I mean, I don't know, dude, like, guys lived longer back then. Maybe he had more time and maybe he had bad influences in his court. I know his son Rehoboam kind of went off the deep end and the whole kingdom split under the stupidity of his reign and the bad counsel he took. So I guess it's not unusual to think that things digress quickly on this planet.
I mean, just a weird thing to think about. At the root of it, though, Solomon built Solomon's temple, which was a place that was intended to pray to God. And he used demons to help build that temple. So talk about instant karma for demons that they hate God, but yet this man is forcing them to build a temple so that people can worship God, their enemy, the person that they hate the most in the world. So again, people want to go back into the moral aspect of controlling demons, like, oh, he's an occultist, he was controlling demons, but he controlled them to do the complete opposite thing that they would ever want to do on this entire planet.
Yeah.
But yet we still want to call this guy evil towards the end, or that he, like, you know, got involved in the dark arts. Like, that is the complete opposite of dark arts. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever just looked at it just as plain as that, that he used demons to build something that they were ideally against. Like, that's control of the dark dark forces, not dark arts, but control of dark forces to a massive extent.
And what's really interesting too, I love that point, because Jesus had mastery over the demons. He had authority over them. They came out when he commanded them. And it's interesting to me that the high priests and the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the people that were taught all of the knowledge and wisdom of the Torah and of Solomon, they were supposed to have authority over the demons. And what actually made them jealous and angry, and which led to their actually pursuing Jesus to his death, was that he had authority over those things. They should have, and they didn't. So if those people being evil, is it that they didn't have authority over them, or maybe they didn't want to cast them out because they were all on the same team? I don't know. But it's interesting, because if you look closely in scripture, the point where all of the Pharisees got together and said, that's it, we're done. And from that point on, they plotted to kill Jesus. It was when he raised Lazarus from the dead. That was the point where they're like, we got to get rid of this guy.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
See, and that kind of goes into what I was going to bring back about Solomon too. We're talking about how there was this turning point where he started looking at being looked at as the bad occultist, and that there may have been some separation in the church. And I don't want to necessarily say there's demons in the church, but if you were a demon and this man figured out how to control you to do things that you didn't want to do, wouldn't your best intention to be to try to manipulate people to say, oh, that's bad, that's not what we do? So maybe it was the demons in the first place that made these people look like they were the bad character, because they didn't want the knowledge getting out that mankind can control them. Because that's almost disrespectful to them, because, you know, they were like, you know, they came from the fallen angels, which essentially didn't want humans to be looked at like they were above them in the first place. And if these demons are getting controlled by humans, that's like the utmost disrespect for them. So it would be in their best interest to try to make anybody through history that's learned how to control them look like they're an occultist and like they're doing something bad, so that the average person that's a light bringer that wants to bring about the word of God isn't going to dive into that and learn how to control them, because they don't want that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really worked to a large degree, because even if you go into the average church, not a lot of churches want to delve into the spiritual warfare. They don't want to talk about deliverance ministries. They don't want to get involved. You know, they're afraid of that. And then you've got the opposite, where you've got people that dive way into it and they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, a lot of people remain in bondage because the people don't know what they're doing. But I mean, there definitely is this hesitancy amongst believers to want to get involved in deliverance ministry and spiritual warfare. And a lot of it is they do not understand the authority that they have. Well, why? Why don't they? Because it says in the Bible that we do. So what or who has convinced them you don't have authority over us?
Exactly. It kind of goes back to one answer, because who or what would be in the, it would be in the interest to do that? It wouldn't be in humans' interest to say, oh, we can't control demons. Why would we ever want to make them do stuff for us? Like, yeah, the finger only points to one place.
Yeah, exactly. Man, I was just going to sort of muse that it's fun talking about this, you know, getting to talk about the Solomon stuff, because I actually did have a thought last year where I went, wait a minute. He wasn't practicing Freemasonry. They're tricking us. So, and I haven't had this discussion. I don't think I've ever had this discussion with anyone. So I'm just like thrilled that you brought it up.
This is one that I've been trying to kind of go back and forth with people for a while, because it's definitely been an interest to me, even looking at it from like the philosophical perspective of, was this man evil or was this man actually good in the first place?
Yeah.
And getting into conspiracies and everything, kind of like you mentioned in the beginning, you almost have to wonder if that could be one of like the original conspiracies, is whether or not Solomon was a good man or an evil man. And it seems like once you start realizing that the controlling forces around us definitely manipulate perspectives of things, that you keep coming back around to it. And it seems like Solomon was this good character that was created to be a bad character towards the end. And that's why he kind of plays the hero for both sides, depending on which era of Solomon you're looking at.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's tough because he did break a lot of the rules. He collected horses and chariots and silver, which it says in the Torah, it tells kings not to amass those things. You know what? Between wives and concubines, 1,000 chicks. I mean, hello, you know, we got a little bit of a, you know, of an addiction there, right? So yeah, I'm not saying the guy was a saint, but wisdom is different than knowledge, and it's different than intelligence. It's different than IQ. The wisdom that he asked God for would have been biblical wisdom. And so he had an edge on everybody. He would have seen through the lies, like what Adam and Eve were unable to do. They couldn't see through that lie of the serpent that he wove through the truth. But if you're the wisest guy in the world, wouldn't you be more prone to identifying that one thread of a lie being woven through the truth? Like, of all the people that you probably couldn't dupe into a false religion, you would think it would be him. And if it's not him, then what hope do any of us have if he was the smartest guy ever?
I mean, on the other side too, I mean, maybe they could have been beneficial for being able to control these dark beings. So maybe he wasn't necessarily messing them for himself, but rather because he was using them for another intention. Or again, getting into the whole aspect of people manipulating things through time. I mean, maybe if they were trying to make this guy look like the bad guy, 1,000 years after he already passed away, somebody said, oh, here's this line. This guy was collecting this. And it's just intended to be a smear campaign that came way later on. It may not have even been anything he did in the first place, but again, just something that was used to try to make him look like he wasn't following the rules that were laid before him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
It's once your mind starts going in that direction, it's just like, how do we know anything's true? And a lot of people, this is where a lot of people give up on pursuing truth or pursuing reality or pursuing religion, because they do get to that point. And there is a point where, you know, you can ask too many questions. You know, you can be the the dwarves that dug too deep in the mines of Moria for the gold and unleashed the Balrog, right? I always use that as the analogy. So there is a point where, you know, we can get off track, but we're supposed to be good Bereans. And I mean, if you even go all the way back to the Jewish traditions with the rabbis and stuff, they would sit around and just ask each other questions. Well, what about this? Well, what about that? Now, one could say, yeah, and they got pretty far off track and wound up in Babylon, right? But I just find that Christianity today has been about showing up to church with your notebook and taking a bunch of notes, and you keep your mouth shut and you go home. And I just think that the church should be way more interactive. There shouldn't be one guy up on the stage giving his little review and then everybody going home.
I mean, if you gave your creation the capacity for intelligence, why would you not want them to expand on that? I mean, philosophy as a whole, I mean, if everything in the world was created by God himself, then philosophy would have been one of those things that was also created by God. And if he didn't want us to dive into the deepest aspects of the mind, then why would he have given us the talent of intelligence? And why would he keep giving us this gradual intelligence where we keep getting smarter and smarter and smarter? Again, I think it's one of those things that it's time and place, that at this time, this knowledge may not have been intended for people, but now that you've grown to this point of your mental capacity, now you start unlocking little more pieces of knowledge as you have more of an understanding on how this functions with your reality. So again, I don't think God would want his people to just stay stagnant and exist in the same place forever. I think he'd want them to grow, flourish, become more and more intelligent. And with that, philosophy is definitely something that has to be brought into religion as a whole also, because without philosophy being involved in it, then you're kind of losing track of people that may have been some of the most diehard Christians you could possibly ever imagine, but because nobody actually sat down and had that moral / philosophical discussion with them, they have no root of understanding for it. And in today's society, you need that, because again, our intelligence has increased. With more intelligence, we have more questions, more answers, and we need to be able to discuss this kind of stuff. And if you keep everything in a box, then again, you're just going to end up losing people that realistically you need, and that could actually help bring more understanding to the religion as a whole. Because with more minds, more philosophy, more thoughts being put onto it, a lot more of this stuff can be understood, and having multiple people's perspectives of deciphering how this particular text was written brings in the ability to, again, understand even more within the Bible itself.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jeremiah 29:13 says, if you seek me, you will find me if you seek me with your whole heart. And that to me is a God who wants to be sought out and discovered, hunted down like a treasure hunt, right? He's not like, hey, I'm just going to lay everything out there and, you know, you can come to the trough and feed and I'll teach you everything. Like, he's purposely set it up that the people that find him are the people that are pursuing him. And I think the pursuit is just as enjoyable on our end of things as it is on his end of things. You know, we as human beings, we like being pursued, right? But the pursuit, especially of knowledge, is enjoyable for us. And I hope that never goes away. Everybody talks about this information booth that they're going to go to in heaven and get the download. I hope that for billions and billions of years, it's still a treasure hunt for knowledge and we're discovering things. There's a joy in discovery. And I hope that that never goes away.
And honestly, it's something that's naturally been put into humans as a whole. So that's, again, another spark from God, so to speak. So if he didn't want us to continuously expand and explore, then why would that be so inheritedly in every single human? And even people that aren't into conspiracies, that aren't into all this kind of stuff, people naturally want to explore things. So even, you know, the most, I'm trying to think of like an exact type of person I could give an example for here, but even somebody that doesn't believe in Christianity at all, doesn't believe in anything, even to a simple child that has no idea of the world itself, exploration seems to be a key role in every single human. So it had to have been put there for a reason. That's in my definition, that would be somewhat of a divine spark.
Yeah. 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 Part of his image.
Exactly. Cause I mean, realistically too, I mean, I feel like God may have an understanding of everything, but there's still probably an interest in exploring people as a whole. Cause I mean, going into the whole experiment concept that we kind of talked about in the beginning, you know, God may understand and know everything in the universe itself, but maybe his interest in exploration comes into watching what his creation is going to do as it expands and continues on. Like, even he still has that spark because exploration is also watching the existence of something and watching it as it expands through time and progresses itself. Like, that's exploration too.
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple of verses, at least in scripture, that talk about the angels and how they are envious of us, in for lack of a better word, because we get to explore things that they don't. We get to look into things that even angels long to look into. And so there is a bit of, you know, they might be superior to us in some ways, but even on the level that we're at, we get to explore things that were just revealed to them. We get to discover things. And there is an awe and a righteous envy in that they're like, man, you know, I wish that we could have that, right? So it seems that even in the angelic creation, there seems to be this desire to look into things that they're forbidden to look into, or for whatever reason. So we've been given the gift of exploration, and a lot of us hit dead ends, and, you know, we have to kind of start over and find our way back out. But for those that do seek, the promise is that those who seek will find.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. I guess with that, this has been a very, very deep conversation, and I'm glad that we're able to get into this time, because I had a lot of stuff that's kind of been sitting on my mind that I was kind of looking for the right person to explore it with, and cool. I definitely think we're going to have to come back around to these particular episodes, because I know you come onto a lot of shows and you talk about the main research that you do, so I always like trying to give people the opportunity to dive into some of the other stuff that they don't normally get to dive into, that they're definitely still knowledgeable on, and again, you're like the perfect person to ask all of these types of questions to, so I definitely think that you and I need to start making a little tally. And when we have these philosophical questions, I feel like we should come back and discuss them together, because we definitely both have interesting perspectives both ways on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Iron sharpens iron. I love it. And it is. As much as I love talking about the stuff that I write about, sometimes it's nice to get a little break.
And that's what I always try to do on this show too, is everybody kind of has their standard thing they talk about. But if I notice that there's this like little spark of light when they bring up these certain topics, then I'll always make sure that we end up doing a full episode on it. And at the end of the last episode, I noticed that little spark, and you mentioned that, you know, you like getting into the philosophy stuff. So I figured, you know, got to come back around and give you something a little bit different to do, especially considering that you've said you've been doing so many podcasts lately. I had to try to mix it up for you at least a little bit.
That's right. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate it, brother.
And with that, we've been kind of speaking words of wisdom all night, but if there is any words of wisdom that you might want to bestow on the listeners today, what might it be?
Yeah, well, just kind of going along with what we've been talking about, I absolutely believe that even though our world is full of lies and subterfuge and smoke and mirrors, that there is such thing as truth with a capital T. We will find it if we pursue it, if we pursue it with our whole heart. So keep digging.
And always remember that there are purposeful distractions that are thrown in your way, and that no matter what happens, you got to make sure you stay the path and don't get pulled off the path by evil forces.
Good word. Good word.
And if anybody wanted to come and find you on social media, they want to come and pick up your book, or they just want to contact you in general to possibly share some stories or some other questions like this possibly that they've kind of been debating on their head, how might people be able to find you on the internet, and where can people come and pick up your book?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. You can get me on my website, VickiJoyAnderson.com. You can contact me via email on that page. You can see my events and upcoming podcasts. You can listen to the podcasts I've been on. If you want to come visit me in person, I'm going to be traveling around quite a bit. I'll be in Ohio at the end of July. I will be in Kentucky, Branson, Idaho Falls, and then back into Eastern Ohio, kind of there towards the Pennsylvania border towards the end of the year. So you can find me on Instagram, Vicky Joy Author. You can get my book, They Only Come Out at Night, Exposing the Dark Weapon of Sleep Paralysis, on lamarzulli.net. And you can now find me on YouTube, Vicky Joy Anderson.
Well, it was absolutely a pleasure to have you on the show, as always. And I'm always looking forward to the next time you come on, because I love these conversations.
Sweet. Me too, Shane. Thanks so much for having me on.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is inquiriesofallrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook. Instagram is the one that I'm more active on, though. Or you guys can go to the Linktree and fill the submission form, and that will go directly to my email. And if anybody is interested in podcast or audiobook production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. And every single link that I mentioned throughout the entire show is all available in the Linktree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
Reality isn't what it seems. Abductees taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes of different galaxies. Bigfoot sucking campers as the Wendigo walks through the woods with sharpened antlers. Using Ouija boards to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Reality. So if you're interested by mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Reality.